Casual Slaughters by Perry Pontiac, with Peter Jeffrey as Sir Nicholas Oblemere and Maureen Lipman as Nottage.
Ah, you play the cello so well, Nottage. You really should study it someday with a proper teacher. Perhaps even go into it full time.
I think not, Sir Nicholas. I'm too much the devoted amateur for that. Rather the same, if I may say, as you are with your detecting.
I understand, of course. Well, thank you again for the serenade.
Not at all, Sir Nicholas. And how are you feeling now?
Oh, all right, I think, Nottage. Ribs and spine still a trifle bruised, fins a bit wobbly perhaps, but now that the neck brace is off, I'm quite myself again.
Thank heavens. A lucky escape after all you've been through. Well, despite your great success in apprehending the culprit.
Quite.
And what a fascinating case it was, Sir Nicholas.
Yes.
Full of subtle clues, mysterious motives, unlikely suspects, eccentric aristocrats, humble working folk, sinister foreigners, magnificent country estates, cozy old pubs and quaint country villages.
True. Very true.
And yet, Sir Nicholas, there is still one thing about the case that I don't understand.
Is there? And what is that, Nottage?
How did you know that the murderer was an unemployed Tunisian chiropodist with a deviated septum and a fondness for Eccles cakes?
An excellent question, Nottage. At first, it was merely what our American friends would call a hunch.
I see.
But it soon became obvious that the only true clues were provided by the absent witnesses, as it were. Do you remember the nanny with a squint who, according to Colonel Dunsmore, went for a melancholy walk along the seawall every evening after sunset to practice her Esperanto, she said?
Yes, Sir Nicholas?
In the way that the son of the family, little Norris, always referred to his sisters as Cato, Catullus, and Caligula, showing a knowledge of the ancient world unusual in one so young and so ignorant.
Yes?
And the look of anger that flashed momentarily in the eyes of Madame Zlobowski whenever the subject of sweet potatoes was mentioned.
Yes, I see, Sir Nicholas. It all fits together perfectly. The smell of lime in the library, the ashes of a legal document in the fireplace, the cannonball at the foot of the stairs. I mean, it could only mean one thing.
True, Nottage. And what is that?
Well, simply that... Oh, pardon me, sir. Sir Nicholas Overmere's residence, the old manor house, Manscottle on the Sturgeon, private secretary of Velma Nottage speaking. One moment, please. It's Lady
Babbage. Oh, is it?
Good afternoon, my dear Lady Babbage. I must say again how very much I enjoyed your fancy dress ball last night. Surely one of the great social occasions of 1933. And your costume, your ladyship, so very... I see. I'll be there immediately. Nottage, get the car. You must drive me to Glamara Hall at once. Lord Babbage has been receiving death threats, written in his own blood.
Yes, Sir Nicholas.
I only hope we arrive there in time.
In time? In time for what, Sir Nicholas?
I wish I knew, Nottage. I very much wish I knew.
Soon, sir. One thing I don't quite understand. How does Lady Babbage know that the death threats are written in her husband's blood?
Lady Babbage is an enthusiastic amateur scientist with an extensive knowledge of bodily fluids of all sorts. Indeed, she recently wrote a brief paper on the subject of bile, to be distributed, of course, amongst only her closest friends. When she saw the blood on the notes, he thought it looked familiar and examined it under a microscope.
I see.
Her ladyship became interested in such things while serving as an amateur surgeon on the Belgian front during the war, specializing in mass amputations. None of that anesthesia nonsense back then. It took nerves of steel. A remarkable woman.
Indeed. Marvelous country around here.
Hmm.
Rolling green hills, old stone walls, ivy-covered cottages, shepherds and milkmaids standing in the shade of handsome elms, with little lambs frisking on every side. So picturesque.
I suppose it is. Ah! There's Gamara Hall. Impressive, isn't it?
Mainly Jacobean, I believe. With Gothic arches, Norman spandrels, and Tudor window boxes.
That's the butler, Minskin, at the door, talking to her ladyship's nephew, Roderick. A bank manager in Evesham, as I recall. I wonder why he's here. Pull in over there, would you?
Certainly, Sir Nicholas.
Ah, Minskin. Please tell her ladyship I've arrived.
Very good, Sir Nicholas.
Good afternoon, Roderick.
Good afternoon, Sir Nicholas.
I believe congratulations are in order, Roderick. Hmm? You're married now, so I'm told.
Oh, yes. They have been for quite a while.
Hmm? Anyone I know?
No. A foreigner. From Silesia. Her name is Erga. Not exactly our sort. Raised as a child in the forest, by wolves, curiously enough.
Indeed.
Yes. Formerly known as the wolf girl of Upper Hissendorf. She's settled down a good deal since then.
Has she?
Yes.
Well, my very best wishes to you both, you and Erga.
Thank you so much, Sir Nicholas. That must be going. Do excuse me.
Lady Babbage, this is my private secretary, Nottage.
How do you do?
Oh, honored, your ladyship.
Ah, Sherry. Thank you, Minskin. And bring us some macaroons, will you? And a pot of that boysenberry marmalade Sir Nicholas likes so much.
Your ladyship.
Well, how are you?
Fine, Sir Nicholas. Never better.
Excellent. I met your nephew Roderick as I arrived.
Oh, don't speak to me of that young man. A great disappointment. We had such hopes for him. Being childless, Lord Babbage and I, well, you understand, I'm sure.
Of course. But haven't you a niece as well?
No, not anymore. Magda was carried off by pneumonia in Ottawa last September.
Oh.
A great loss to the world of fucoidal toxicology. She was an international authority, you know.
Fucoidal toxicology?
The study of poisonous seaweeds, Nottage. Largely occurring, if the popular press is to be believed, in the waters off Malaya and the Tasmanian archipelago.
I see.
Magda left her complete collection of specimens, easily the largest in Shropshire, to a local resident, a man named Ernest Stello. I can't imagine why.
Stello? The chap with the stammer and the goatee? Who plays the concertina and lives in the converted windmill?
No, his twin brother, the vicar. A handsome man with a lantern jaw and piercing grey eyes. Such a comfort in difficult times.
Now, to these threatening notes, Lady Babbage. Has Lord Babbage any enemies?
Ainsley? Has he any friends? Would be a more searching question. He doesn't suffer fools gladly, and he finds wise people even more objectionable. Yes, alas, none of your native charm, my dear Nicky, nor your persuasive elegance. More sherry?
Thank you.
Narcissus?
Yes, thank you, your ladyship.
And now, Lady Babbage, I'm going to ask you a single question concerning these death threats. I want you to think long and hard and deeply before answering. I will allow you several minutes to consider your reply. A very great deal. Perhaps the key to this case and to many others of a similar nature may hang on your words. Please listen carefully.
I will, of course, Sir Nicholas.
What? Or who? Or indeed whom? Or why? Or for that matter, when and where and whither was the very first...
Your ladyship!
What is it, Laura?
Oh, your ladyship is dead! And my servant is dead!
Dead?
Yes, ma'am. He's been disemboweled in the conservatory.
Disemboweled?
Poor Lord Babbage. My deepest condolences, your ladyship. He were a good man. And his way...
Ainsley dead? He Is this true, Minsky?
Unhappily, I must concur, Your Ladyship. I was returning from the pantry with the macaroons and marmalade when, glancing for a moment into the conservatory, I beheld the lamentable scene young Dora has just described. His Lordship disemboweled. And I regret to add, his contents scattered willy-nilly about the room.
Indeed, Minskin. Ainsley. Dead.
My girl, telephone the local constabulary immediately. Chief Inspector Wardle, and be sure to mention my name, Overmere, with one V.
Yes, Sir Nicholas.
And Minskin, instruct the staff to leave everything in the conservatory just as it is. They are not to move so much as a single one of his lordship's bowels. Is that clear?
Yes, Sir Nicholas, I understand.
Ainsley.
Now, my dear Lady Babbage, I appreciate this must be a difficult time for you, but it is imperative that you control your feelings for the moment and answer a few questions. As you will have gathered, this has been a particularly odious murder. Brutal, savage, obscene. Indeed, in my long career, dealing as I do with... how does Shakespeare put it? Carnal, bloody and unnatural acts. Accidental judgments, casual slaughters. Yes, I've never heard of a killing of such a malevolent and bestial nature. Hideous, foul, almost beyond belief. Is it not, Nottage?
Quite so, Sir Nicholas. I am deeply revolted, if I may say so.
And therefore it is more than usually vital to apprehend the culprit with all possible speed. Now, have you seen any suspicious characters in the area recently? Beggars, anarchists, Frenchmen, Jews, gypsies, people in disguise.
Oh,
no!
Perhaps some smelling salts, sir.
Yes, yes. Capital idea, Nottage. Ah, Minskin, smelling salts, please.
But, I'm afraid I don't know where...
Well, then, a dram of whiskey, man.
Yes,
sir. And do hurry, Minskin.
Yes, here we are.
Good.
Well.
She seems to be coming round, Nottage.
Yes.
Your cummerbund, Minskin. Your cummerbund is stained with blood.
So it is.
No.
Indeed, quite dripping with the stuff.
True, very true. What is the meaning of this, Minsky?
No.
He's trying to escape, Sir Nicholas. Look, he's lumbering away towards the French windows.
So I see. With your permission, Lady Babbage, I shall race through the drawing room after Minsky and execute a flying tackle and foil his escape.
By all means, Sir Nicholas, please do.
Thank you.
Good show, Sir Nicholas. Jolly good show.
Excellent work, Sir Nicholas.
Thank you, Chief Inspector Wardlaw.
We'll just take a few more statements, then gather up the remains of his lordship. Have you had a peep at them?
Indeed, I have. Fascinating.
And then we'll rough up that brute Minskin for a while and drag him down to the station. From what we've discovered, he's our man.
And may I thank you too, Sir Nicholas?
Not at all, Your Ladyship. My pleasure. Come, Dottie.
Right with you, sir. Congratulations again, sir.
Thank you, Nottage. And yet...
What is it, Sir Nicholas? Surely you can have no doubt about Minskin's guilt.
I don't know, Nottage. I just don't know.
But, sir, there was blood on his cummerbund. And you heard him confess his guilt to the police. There were the entries in Minskin's diary for today. Luncheon served at 1:30. His lordship disemboweled at 4:15. Sherry at 5. Creaked stealthily from the house at 10:30. Board steamer for South America at midnight. With a ticket for the voyage in Minskin's wallet. His suitcase was full of stolen valuables from the house. Practice copies of his threatening notes were discovered under the mattress. A quantity of his lordship's blood, apparently drawn from his veins as he slept, and clearly labelled, was found in Minskin's inkwell. A manual on the finer points of disembowelment lay on his bedside table. The man is of foreign descent. What further proof do you need?
I don't know, Nottage. It's somehow all too perfect, too easy, too neat, too beyond reasonable doubt.
If I may say so, sir, I don't agree. As far as I'm concerned, it's as clear as day the man is guilty.
My dear Nottage, contrary to popular opinion, days are not always clear. There is an island off the coast of Chile, for example, where the volcanoes regularly belch such thick and heavy smoke that it hovers in the air all day, an impenetrable mist. Indeed, the only light the place has ever known came on Whitsuntide last year, when all the volcanoes simultaneously erupted, destroying the island and sinking it and its luckless inhabitants deep in the sea.
Indeed.
And yet, my dear girl, thank you. Once again, your frank, vigorous ignorance has led me to the truth.
Sir Nicholas?
As you will recall, Nottage, according to Minskin's diary, he was boarding a steamship at midnight for Hasta Fuego, the very South American island I've just been describing, and which, of course, no longer exists. Clearly, such a voyage is quite impossible, and therefore the ticket and the diary entry are both forgeries. Turn the car round. We shall have to return to Glamara Hall immediately. Pray God we're not too late.
Too late? Too late for what, Sir Nicholas?
I'm not sure, my dear Nottage. I'm not sure at all.
What's that, Sir Nicholas? You say the Minskin is innocent?
Quite, Chief Inspector Wardle. I think that on closer examination, you'll find that the blood on his cummerbund is in truth merely boysenberry marmalade, which spilled on him as he brought it from the pantry. The diary entries and threatening notes are, I suspect, not in his handwriting, nor will his fingerprints be found on the stolen booty.
Check all this out, will you, Cranford?
Sir?
But if this is true, Sir Nicholas, why did Minskin confess?
Out of loyalty, Chief Inspector. He plainly thought that Lord Babbage had killed himself. A great family disgrace, not to be borne. And so took the responsibility, as it were, of the murder on himself.
Remarkable.
Well, it's not surprising. I have any number of menials on my own staff who wouldn't hesitate to put themselves in the gravest danger in the hope of saving me from some minor embarrassment, much less from the shame of self-slaughter. Nottage, here, for example.
Oh, yes, sir. I'd be honoured.
But could it have been suicide, Sir Nicholas?
Possibly. Lord Babbage spent several years in the audience where, so they say, self-disembowelment is rather a way of life. But the random scattering of the innards and the heavy bruise on the forehead are not at all consistent with such an hypothesis.
So Minskin was framed?
It seems likely.
But by who?
Oh, I wish I knew, Chief Inspector. I very much wish I knew. We must question Lady Babbage again. Where is she?
I'm afraid I don't know, Sir Nicholas.
Gentlemen?
Ah, Reverend Stallow. Have you seen her ladyship?
She has retired to her bedchamber, Sir Nicholas, to rest and to mourn.
Indeed. An exhausting day for her, no doubt.
Truly.
Reverend Stallow, may I ask precisely why you are here?
Simply to comfort Lady Babbage in her desolation, Sir Nicholas. She and Lord Babbage regularly attended services at St. Ubaldo's in the village, and I often come here to preach in their private chapel.
Indeed.
No doubt it will be my sad duty to preach the funeral sermon on Lord Babbage. I shall, I think, speak on the spiritual value of wealth, taking as my text Matthew 19. It is easier for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than for a needle to go through the eye of a camel. My own translation, Sir Nicholas.
You were close to their late niece, Magda, were you not, Reverend Stella?
Magda? I was her spiritual advisor during a difficult period for her, nothing more.
Pardon me, gentlemen. I thought you might like some tea.
Oh, thank you, Vera. An excellent idea, eh, Notty?
Rather. I shall pour it, if I may. A cup, Chief Inspector?
Please.
Reverend Stella?
Thank you. Yes.
What an unusual fragrance.
Indeed.
Quite so. Ah, don't drink the tea, anyone.
But
look, the leaves in the pot are curiously autumnal in hue, yellow and black and pale and hectic red. I wonder. Yola,
Is this the tea usually served at Clamara Hall?
No, Sir Nicholas. The family always drinks the Babbage blend. This was delivered by mistake last week. It's called Cash Liquor Superb, I think. And...
Yes, Clara?
Oh, sir, I did bring his lordship a pot of this tea shortly before he... Well, I thought you might like something different.
And who provides the tea for the hall?
One of the tea merchants in the village.
Which one? Think, my girl. It may be a matter of the gravest importance.
Pardon me, Sir Nicholas.
Minskin, so they released you already.
Yes, thank you so much, sir. The tea shop in question is Swainley's in the village on the old Darbington Road, purveyor of tea to the Babbages for centuries.
Thank you, Minskin. Come, Nottage, you must drive me to the village and we must hurry. Indeed, I fear it may already be too late.
Too late? Too late for what, Sir Nicholas?
I'm not sure, Chief Inspector. I'm not sure at all.
Afternoon, sir. Madam.
My good man, I want some information about a certain blend of tea you recently delivered to Glamara Hall.
I'm sorry, sir, but I can't possibly...
Not their usual blend, but Cash Liquor Superb.
Cash Liquor? It's so a great mistake, sending such a tea to Lord and Lady Babbage. Thank you so much for bringing it to my notice. Are you interested in purchasing the tea yourself, sir?
I'm interested only in knowing which of your customers regularly purchase it.
I'm sorry, sir, but I never reveal the names of my regular customers. In this business, confidentiality is everything.
Allow me to impress upon you that I am Sir Nicholas Overmere, Baronet of the old manor house, Mernscottle-on-the-Sturch, aristocratic amateur sleuth, and leaseholder of several properties on this quaint village street, among them this little shop of yours.
Oh, of course. One moment, Sir Nicholas.
Yes.
Mother, bring the regular customer's account book, and do hurry.
Here it is, son.
Well, set it on the counter.
Yes, son.
You may go, Mother. I'll give you a shout when we finish with the book.
Yes, yes, of course. Goodbye, all. So charming to have left you.
Now, let me see. Cash Liquor Superb. Ah, yes. Produced at the Malaguna Tea Plantation, Sumatra. Goes to only one customer, a Professor W. Erdmore Plins, Fellow of Wortley College, Cambridge.
Oh, indeed. Why, the man was my Anglo-Saxon tutor back in my university days. Come, Nottage. We must go to Cambridge immediately. There's not a moment to lose.
Yes, Sir Nicholas, of course. What a charming place Cambridge is, Sir Nicholas. Spacious squares, lofty spires, mellow domes. Students everywhere in their black robes and mortarboards. Some of them sprawled on the lawns translating Euclid. Others on the daffodil-strewn meadows, acting out scenes from the Fairy Queen, as swans float gracefully down the willow-fringed river. So picturesque.
Yes, I suppose it is.
Oh, and look, high in that Gothic tower, an old white-haired pedant is reading, if I'm not mistaken, an illuminated manuscript of the early 13th century by the light of a single candle. Ooh, and now it seems he's being interrupted by an angry young woman.
Why, that's Professor W. Erdmore Plins, my old tutor. Quick, got it. Up the ancient stairway.
Oh. I'm sorry, Miss Hillcrum. There is no question of my interfering in the matter. Now, if you have nothing more to say...
I warn you, Professor. I have friends in high places, and I am used to getting my way.
My dear Miss Pilgrim, I must have...
I also have friends in low places. Foul, heartless creatures who strike in the night. Malevolence is their métier, Professor. Torture their talent, and death their dear delight.
Are you threatening me, Miss Pilgrim?
Professor, I am...
Professor Erdmore Plin.
Yes?
Goodbye, Professor.
I'm so sorry. An aggrieved former undergraduate, unhappy with her exam results, it seems. Oh, Sir Nicholas, is it not?
Yes. Hello, Professor.
Sir Nicholas, the young Overmere, my dear, dear fellow.
And this is Nottage.
Oh, delighted, Miss Nottage.
Professor.
My dear Overmere, how can I help you? Some vexing question on a point of Anglo-Saxon text, perhaps?
I'm afraid, Professor, that I seek information in my capacity as sleuth rather than scholar.
I see. But how can I...
I gather, Professor, that you are a tea drinker with most particular preferences. Indeed, that you favour a blend called Cash Liquor Superb.
Quite so, Sir Nicholas.
A strange tea of singular hue and fragrance. And taste, I should imagine.
The taste is most foul, I fear, and the tea quite undrinkable.
But then why...
Why do I continue to order it? A year or so ago, while on a bicycle tour of the Sturch Valley, your part of Shropshire, I believe, Sir Nicholas, I stopped in a tea shop, and intrigued by the label, I purchased several pounds of the stuff. Back in my rooms, I opened the packets and found in each of them, deep amongst the tea leaves, a brief mysterious note, a kind of desperate plea. Save me, rescue me, free me, do help me, please. That sort of thing, all written in blood.
In blood?
Yes. I have continued to order the tea in hope of collecting the entire series. Look, here are some of them.
It's very interesting. This is the handwriting of an upper-middle-class English female, don't you agree, Nottage?
Oh, yes, Sir Nicholas. Most probably educated, I should think, in Sussex. Look at the loops in the H's and P's and the frequency of semicolons.
Excellent, Nottage.
Though there's one note I don't understand. It reads, great danger to A.B.
Let me see. A.B. Ainsley Babbage. His late lordship's name.
Indeed, Sir Nicholas.
Nottage, we must leave immediately for Sumatra.
Sumatra?
Right. You have, I believe, an aeroplane pilot's license?
Yes, Sir Nicholas. Only a learner's. I received it last month. So I can buzz over to Deauville now and then for Coquille Saint-Jacques, that sort of thing. You know, sir, with a gentleman friend.
Ah. And is there such a person, Nottage?
Not at present, Sir Nicholas.
But weren't you engaged to be married at one time? He died, I seem to recall, in mysterious circumstances.
Not particularly mysterious, Sir Nicholas. Bertrand was doing a unicycle tour of the Hebrides for charity when he was struck by lightning. These things happen.
Rotten luck, though.
Poor fellow.
We shall drive now to Droitwich Aerodrome, Nottage, where we'll hire a suitable machine which you can pilot to Sumatra.
But, Sir Nicholas, I had hoped we could have a little tete-a-tete this afternoon in Anglo-Saxon over a flagon of mead, perhaps, in the Great Hall.
Very tempting, of course. Another time.
But...
We dare not delay, woman. Indeed, it may be too late already.
Of course, Sir Nicholas.
Goodbye, Professor.
Goodbye, young Overmere. Nottage. And good luck, my dear, dear fellow.
La Belle France below us, if I'm not mistaken, Nottage.
Yes, Sir Nicholas, I believe so.
Continue due southwest for a while, then make a sharp left at the Pyrenees and carry on over the Po Valley in the general direction of the Moldavian plains.
Have you flown before, Sir Nicholas?
Yes, Nottage. I was a fighter pilot in the Great War.
Were you, sir? I had no idea.
Oh, I seldom speak about it. Indeed, I don't believe I've ever mentioned it to anyone before. So many of my fellow pilots perished in the conflict, Nottage, shot down by the Hun. Several of them caught off guard while writing war poems. Sonnets, mainly.
Dear me.
We shall have to refuel in Bhutan and the Bay of Bengal. With any luck, we'll catch the prevailing winds over Omsk and arrive at Sumatra International Airport around Wednesday morning. We shall then hire a rickshaw to take us to the Maranguna tea plantation. I only hope we're there in time.
In time? In time for what, Sir Nicholas?
I've no idea, my dear Nottage. I have no idea at all.
What a fascinating place Sumatra is, Sir Nicholas. Lemurs, spider monkeys, and great bearded sloths hanging from every tree, and dainty maidens with parasols and fans wading through the lily ponds. So exotic.
I suppose so. And yet this rickshaw man of ours is so damnably slow. Pull faster, man.
I'm not sure he understands you, sir.
Unfortunately, I never mastered the vulgar dialect of East Sumatra. Faster, man, faster! Oh, I know. Not it. Hand me that cylindrical leather case in my valise, would you?
Certainly, sir. What is it?
My whip. I always carry it with me for just such occasions. Now we're moving at a cracking pace. You see, not it? Dialects may differ, but the language of the lash is understood in every land. A useful tip for the first-time traveller in the audience.
Yes, Sir Nicholas.
We should arrive at the tea plantation very soon indeed.
Mottage, I want you to go in there alone and speak to the overseer. Mm. People can be very secretive in this part of the world. Mm. Use all your feminine wiles, such as they are, to prize whatever information you can about the owner of the plantation.
Yes, Sir Nicholas.
The overseer will almost certainly be a countryman of ours, probably from the provinces, a man starved for English female company who may well respond to even your advances. It's a shame you're not wearing a veil to add a touch of mystery. Still, do your best.
Very well, Sir Nicholas. I shall try. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, come in.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, miss.
Warm weather we're having.
True, miss. Though a brief monsoon is expected just after tea, I believe.
Oh, is it?
May I help you?
Perhaps so. I wonder if you'd be kind enough to tell me the name of the owner of the Maranguna tea plantation.
Certainly, miss. It's owned by the Nabob of Cashleaker.
I see. And his home address, please?
His palace is just down the road. It's on the right, past the grove of the sacred banyan trees. It's a large building. Courtyard on the left, elephant stables on the right. You can't miss it. Knock twice and enter. Take a brochure if you'd like.
Oh, thank you so much. I do appreciate all your help. Goodbye.
The owner of the plantation is the Nabob of Kashlika, sir. His palace is just down the road.
Excellent. Well, Nottage. And a brochure as well, I see. Well, do get in.
Yes, Sir Nicholas.
Walk on. Walk on.
Sumptuous palace, is it not, sir? The interior of the entrance hall, all silver and vermilion. And look, Sir Nicholas, at the far end of the hall, walking towards us, a man in a crimson turban, lime green jodhpurs, an overblouse of cloth of gold of tissue, and silken sky blue slippers which turn up at the toes like crescent moons. So colourful.
It must be the Nabob himself. Let me do the talking, Nottage. I've long been a student of royal Sumatran dialects.
Castor, Nitubra, Mistau, Sam.
Pastiv, Nitubra.
Uka, Uka, Devlan, Smustaka.
Vardi, Lefambru, Sanikva, Lust. Ovalmir. Is it you, my dear chap?
What?
Don't you recognize me, Ovalmir? Nastan Kambut Sailin, the heir to the Nabobship of Kashlika. We were at Wellington together, old fellow.
How is it you, my dear Dusky? Not it, Dusky and I were at school together. How are you, old man?
Fine, thank you. And you, Ovalmir.
Oh, excellent, thank you, Dusky. This is my private secretary, Nottage. Nottage, Dusky, the Nabob of Kashlika.
Honored, Your Eminence.
How do you do? Ah, Miss Nottage, such merry japes Ovalmir and I had at Wellington. You have no idea. One was always being mocked in the shower or laughed at in chapel or punched on the playing fields. One had not before experienced the famous British schoolboy sense of humour, but one grew to relish it soon enough. And what brings you to Sumatra, my dear bloke?
Idle curiosity. Just looking round.
Well, your tea plantation seems to be thriving, old fellow.
A great success over here.
Yet one would hardly think that the tea trade alone would allow you such luxurious surroundings and such opulent garments.
Would one not, my dear Overmere?
No. Nor can I account for the many banners hanging in the courtyard proclaiming in High Sumatran, big sale on Tuesday, blonde's a speciality. Well, Dusky?
As a fellow Wellingtonian, you will, I know, respect the secrecy of anything I tell you.
Of course, Dusky.
I also have a little sideline, my dear Overmere. Young women, English society beauties, mainly blue-eyed, rose-lipped, petal-cheeked virgins visiting the colonies, abducted by my agents and auctioned every month on the palace grounds. We get quite a crowd here. You'd be surprised.
I see.
Most profitable. Though it can be an expensive operation, housing, feeding, and caring for the girls, so we encourage them to earn their keep. Nothing too rigorous. Packing tea, for example.
Very resourceful.
Now, may I offer you a hookah and a chalice of our famous Sumatran kumquat liqueur?
I fear not, Dusky. Not until I must be going.
Oh, but surely not so soon, my dear chap.
I'm sorry, but you see, I've become a world-famous amateur sleuth, working at the moment on a particularly baffling case. Perhaps we'll come by on our next visit.
I would be honored. I shall call a servant to show you out. But as you...
No, we'll find our own way. Thank you. Goodbye, Dusky.
Goodbye, my dear friend. So lovely to see you again. Goodbye, Nottage.
Your Eminence. I didn't think this is the way we came in, Mr. Nicholas.
When we entered Nottage, I thought I heard the sound of upper-middle-class whimpering coming from down this corridor, perhaps. Now, listen. Do you hear it?
Yes, Sir Nicholas. I believe I do. It's someone behind this door, I think.
Right. It's locked. Lend me a hairpin, will you, Nottage, so I can pick the lock?
Certainly, Sir Nicholas. But who can it be?
An English society beauty, I expect. Something to do with the white slave trade.
Indeed.
Ah, good.
Why, it's Amanda Boreaster Lee, if I'm not mistaken. One of the leading beauties of the London scene a few years ago.
Yes I am.
I once read about you in the debutante Daily Echo. A serene girl with golden hair and a flawless complexion, fond of hockey and hot air ballooning, and devoted to her Afghan hound, Merriman Spintex III.
But who are you?
Sir Nicholas Overmere, my dear.
And Nottage. Come to save you.
Oh, excellent.
But what a dismal room this is, Miss Boreaster Lee. Cobwebs on the ceiling, slime on the walls, with mongoose droppings in the corners. So gloomy. And you're wearing a ball and chain.
Quite.
I shall release you from it immediately, my dear.
Oh, thank you, Sir Nicholas.
Sorry to be a nuisance, Nottage, but may I borrow your nail file?
Of course, sir. How long have you been here, Miss Boreaster Lee?
I don't know. It's been simply ghastly. I'm chained here for hours every day, except when I'm taken to the tea vault to do a little packing. Mm-hmm. I've been stuffing notes, desperate pleas for help in amongst the tea leaves.
We know. That is what has led us here.
There is a rumour that I'm to be put up for auction next Tuesday. Your arrival could not have been more timely.
I'm pleased to hear it. Damn difficult lock, this. Well, quite intriguing.
Pardon me, Sir Nicholas, but there's just one thing I don't understand.
Yes, Nottage.
What precisely is the connection between Miss Boreaster Lee's captivity here and the murder of Lord Davidge? I must confess I'm quite baffled on this point.
An excellent question, Nottage. Perhaps we should let Miss Boreaster Lee provide us with the answer.
Connection? None that I know of. I'm very sorry to learn of his lordship's death, of course. A fine and distinguished man, I have no doubt. But I'm afraid I've never heard of him before.
No?
No. But one of your notes, written in blood, read, great danger to A.B., the late Lord Davidge's initials.
A.B. are also my initials, Miss Nottage. Amanda Boreaster Lee. And my notes, I'm afraid, weren't written in blood, just good, strong tea.
So it's merely coincidence. The murder of Lord Babbage, the delivery of the tea at Clamara Hall, and your being the prisoner of my old school chum, the nabob of Kashleeka.
I should think so, Sir Nicholas.
Oh, I see. It's not that we'd be wasting precious time, don't you, Delphire? We must leave Sumatra immediately. There's not a moment to lose.
Indeed, Sir Nicholas.
Yes. Well, do come along.
But surely we can't abandon Miss Boreas to leave.
Well, surely not, Sir Nicholas.
In the excitement of the hunt, my dear Nottage, one must pursue the fox at full gallop and not be drawn aside by the odd rabbit or vole that happens to bob up somewhere along the margin of the chase. And yes, Miss Boreas to leave, let me assure you, you have my full sympathy. May I suggest that you write to your Member of Parliament? Now let us go, Nottage. We must hail a rickshaw to the airport and return to England.
Very well, Sir Nicholas.
Once in Shropshire, I shall assemble all the suspects and identify at last the murderer of Lord Babbage.
Will you, Sir Nicholas? And if I may ask, who is the murderer?
I wish I knew, Nottage. I only wish I knew.
Everyone is assembled in the great ballroom, Sir Nicholas.
Thank you, Minskin. Let us enter, Nottage.
What a splendid room, Sir Nicholas. Such immense proportions, with paintings of the classical gods on the walls and hanging from the richly carved ceiling threaded with gold, a great chandelier of rubies and diamonds. So magnificent.
Yes, I suppose it is. Your attention, please. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for coming. This has been, I confess, the most puzzling of crimes. Indeed, the murder of Lord Babbage seems to have been quite motiveless. I have therefore assembled here today everyone in the vicinity who seems to have had no motive. Such a crowd, 112 in all, I believe, is unusually large for a group of murder suspects. So I am indebted to Lady Babbage for allowing us the use of the great ballroom here at Damara Hall.
Not at all, Sir Nicholas. My pleasure.
We shall begin with a roll call. Nottage.
Thank you, Sir Nicholas. Lady Babbage.
Here.
Thank you, Your Ladyship. Minskin, the butler.
Here, madam.
Laura, the maid.
Here.
Roderick, Lady Babbage's nephew.
Here.
And his wife, Erga, the former wolf girl of Upper Hissendorf. The Reverend Stallow.
Here.
And his twin brother, Gilbert.
Here.
Mr. Swainley, purveyor of tea.
Here.
And his enfeebled mother, Dillis.
Here.
Chief Inspector Wardle.
Here, ma'am.
Professor Erdmore Plins of Wortley College, Cambridge.
Here.
And his embittered former student, Miss Philcrum.
Here.
Plus servants, retainers, members of staff, tenant farmers, ploughboys, stable lads, blacksmiths, chimney sweeps, plumbers, publicans, shopkeepers, librarians, estate agents, schoolmasters, post office mistresses, tea room proprietors, and the Lord Mayor. Lord Mayor. Yes, all present, I see. Back to you, Sir Nicholas.
Thank you, Nottage. As I say, a most mysterious crime, ladies and gentlemen, and with a wealth of suspects, though each of them without a motive, and I fear with precious little opportunity. Among them, you, Miss Philcrum.
I, Sir Nicholas.
At the time of Lord Babbage's murder, you were undergoing a course of hydrotherapy at a health spa near Rotherham, were you not?
Quite right, I was.
And you, Reverend Stallow.
Yes.
You, Reverend Stallow, were singing the Messiah with the Uttoxeter Choral Society at the Freemasons Hall, Swanage. A basso profundo, I believe.
Indeed so, Sir Nicholas.
And you, Professor Erdmore Plins, you were far away as well, tasting the delights of a special beowulf weekend in Kidderminster.
Quite so, young Oblemere.
Everyone, it seems, is beyond suspicion. For example, you, young Roderick.
Aye, Sir Nicholas.
At the time of the murder, here at the hall, now established as the evening of April the 18th last, during the fancy dress ball,
Though the body in the conservatory was not discovered until the following day, you, young Roderick, were in Evesham, I believe, addressing a conference of fellow bank managers at the Pilbeam Hotel, the Casbah Room.
Yes.
Addressing them on the subject of responsible accountancy in modern banking. Well, Roderick? Roderick?
All right. All right, I did it. I did it.
Did what, Roderick?
Oh, embezzled funds, Miss Nottage. From my bank. Been doing it for years. But you see, it was only to feed my obsession. That is, to feed my wife.
Your wife?
Yes. You must understand, as the former wolf girl of Upper Hissendorf, Erga is used to a very specific diet. Boar, bear, peacock, owl, great tufted bustard, elk, Silesian muskox, Swabian marmoset, items not locally available and which are shipped to us by our suppliers in Eastern Europe at a cost which I fear is far beyond the range of my humble income.
Is this true, madam? I see.
Well, interesting in this way, of course, but hardly relevant to the murder of Lord Babbage.
Sorry, Sir Nicholas, but at least this absurd masquerade is over. Over and done with, eh, Erga?
Masquerade, do you say? Masquerade? My dear Nottage, I know at last the name of the murderer.
Do you, Sir Nicholas?
Mm-hmm.
Who is it, Sir Nicholas?
The assailant of Lord Babbage in the conservatory was a common burglar.
A burglar, sir?
Did you notice, Chief Inspector, the mark on his lordship's forehead? Mm-hmm. It was the impression of the words Club Deluxe, the trade name of a brand of Kosh much favoured by modern burglars and, as such, engraved on each of the products.
I see, Sir Nicholas, a burglar. Oh, but surely he's not here.
No. Though I suspect he's in your custody already. Have you recently arrested anyone for possession of some items stolen from a conservatory? A leather album of pressed flowers, perhaps?
Well, indeed, yes. Someone was trying to flog such a thing on the high street without a license and was picked up, well, only yesterday, I believe.
Yeah.
But how did you know?
A foreign sort of person, I have no doubt. Such crimes are invariably perpetrated by aliens, anarchists, Frenchmen, Jews, gypsies, someone of that sort.
Not in this case, Sir Nicholas. He's an Englishman. A local fellow, born and bred. A Mr. Julian Fortescue.
Indeed, Chief Inspector. Well, merely the exception that proves the rule.
And now that I come to think of it, everyone we arrest in this village seems to be English.
Oh?
Yes, but surely, Chief Inspector, this only demonstrates the soundness of Sir Nicholas's rule, having been proved over and over again by so many exceptions.
Yeah, of course. So, Sir Nicholas, the burglar Fortescue is our murderer?
No, he is merely our assailant. The killer is quite another. Consider, Chief Inspector. Mm. It is the evening of the fancy dress ball at Glamara Hall, held in this very ballroom, where one of the many guests is himself dressed as a burglar. In the conservatory in the West Wing, Lord Babbage is leafing through an album when he is struck on the head by a real burglar, your Mr. Fortescue. One of the party girls, a woman in fancy dress, having heard a noise, enters the conservatory, observes the scene, and assumes that the culprit is her secret love, the guest in the burglar costume, and that Lord Babbage will be able to identify him as his attacker. She therefore kills Lord Babbage and returns to the ball, now at its height.
Oh, highly original theory, Sir Nicholas, but have you any proof?
My dear Chief Inspector, I myself was a guest at that very ball, dressed for the occasion, rather ironically, I thought, as a burglar. But perhaps Lady Babbage would prefer to tell us the rest.
Lady Babbage?
Lady Babbage?
Lady Babbage?
Very well, very well, very well. I did it, I did it, I did it. But I did it for love. For love and life and laughter. And for him. And for us.
I see. Do continue, Your Ladyship.
Sir Nicholas is quite right, Chief Inspector. I entered the conservatory at midnight and saw in the candlelight what I assumed was my inamorato. My dear, dear Sir Nicholas Overmere.
Huh?
My joy, my secret pride, my sweet nest of love. In his burglar costume, black mask and cap and so forth, bludgeoning my husband. A crime of passion, or so I assumed. As the true burglar, as I later discovered him to be, leapt through the window, I saw my husband turn and point an accusing finger at him. Fearing Lord Babbage would report my beloved Sir Nicholas to the police, besmirching his honor and destroying his reputation forever, and yes, in order to rid myself of my husband, and yes, to make it possible that Sir Nicholas and I could at last consecrate our eternal life-affirming passion in marriage and the uniting of our two great names and estates, I, rather on the spur of the moment, slew my husband. I was dressed, as it happens, as Britannia, and so, of course, had a large trident immediately to hand, with which I scooped out his lordship's innards and flung them idly around the room.
Lady Babbage!
When I returned to the festivities, I saw that Sir Nicholas was still there, and I realized my ghastly mistake. The next morning, I tried to put the blame on poor Minskin, my butler, who doubtless would have been convicted and, with any luck, executed for the crime, had not Sir Nicholas, with his customary brilliance, foiled my plan.
Quite so, your ladyship.
Oh, we should have been so happy, my darling. My great and only love, my tender, my ardent, my devoted Sir Nicholas.
Lady Babbage, I don't know which I find more appalling. The murder of a distinguished peer of ancient lineage, or the suggestion that you and I are partners in some great romance, and that I would ever consider marriage to you. You! The doxy of the district, the trull of the parish, the ready relief and idle pastime of every ploughboy and blacksmith in Shropshire, the jest of the smoking room, the boast of the pantry, the mock and scorn of all the saloon bars in the Midlands and all the gentlemen's clubs in London. There has always been only one woman in my life, your ladyship, and you are hardly she.
Oh, Sir Nicholas! Nicky! Oh, this is quite unbearable. Out of my way!
She's running madly through the crowd towards the back door. Shall I stop her, Sir Nicholas?
No, Chief Inspector, I shall. Lottie, give me a boost up to the great ruby and diamond chandelier. I shall swing in the direction of her ladyship and drop upon her before she can escape. Put it out!
Certainly, Sir Nicholas.
Careful, sir.
Are you all right, Sir Nicholas? Sir Nicholas?
Yes, thank you, Lottie. Fortunately, Lady Babbage broke my fall.
That's not all that's broken, sir.
What do you mean, Minskin? Her heart?
No, Sir Nicholas. Her neck.
Indeed?
She is. She is. Oh.
Lady Babbage.
Oh, my poor ladyship! My ladyship! Oh, Mr. Minskin!
Don't weep, young Laura. Lady Babbage is now mistress of a far greater mansion than this. Her butler is St. Peter, and her maids are angels all.
Come, Lottie. Our task here is over.
Yes. Yes, of course, Sir Nicholas.
Another brandy, Lottie.
Yes, thank you, Sir Nicholas.
A fascinating case in many ways. With a touch or two of pathos, did you notice?
Yes, I believe I did.
Soda?
Please. Sir Nicholas, I'm afraid there's still something I don't understand.
Yes, Lottie, what is it?
Do you remember when you said to her ladyship that there was only one woman in your life? I rather wondered...
There is only one girl for me, Nottage.
Is there, Sir Nicholas?
Yes. As you above all others know very well.
Oh, do I?
Of course. The only girl who's been with me through all my sleuthing, by my side in great danger and great triumph, my unfailing, indispensable support and aid, the true and trusty partner of my deepest passion.
I see.
My companion, my inspiration, she whose favor I alone crave and whose image I alone revere.
Oh, indeed, Sir Nicholas, I see.
Yes, my sweet and only love.
Oh.
The little lady with a sword in one hand and a pair of scales in the other, who stands on the dome of the Old Bailey.
Who, Sir Nicholas?
Men call her Justice.
Oh, I see. Yes, of course.
She is my Nottage and I am hers. And so we shall continue, Justice and I, as long as this world remains the cruel, dishonest, unthinking place it is. Why, Nottage, there are tears in your eyes.
Are there, sir?
Were you so very moved by my brief discourse on justice?
Yes, I suppose I was.
You're a sentimental old thing and no mistake. Who would have thought it?
Oh, who indeed, sir? Pardon me, Sir Nicholas, but I have one final question.
Do you, Nottage? And what is that?
Do you think, Sir Nicholas, that mankind will ever improve? That the world will someday learn to be fair and just and kind and thoughtful? Rewarding loyalty and love and truth?
Who can say, Nottage? The 1930s seem to be a time of great change. There are some very promising social experiments taking place even now in Italy and Germany. One wishes them well, of course. But as for mankind itself and the future, I wish I knew, my dear Nottage. I only wish I knew. And now, do play something for me on your cello, won't you? A soothing ditty, perhaps.
Of course I shall, Sir Nicholas. With pleasure. With very great pleasure indeed.
In Casual Slaughters by Perry Pontek, Peter Jeffrey played Sir Nicholas Oglemere and Maureen Lipman, Nottage. John Rowe was Minskin, the Nabob of Kishlika, the Professor, and Mr. Swainley. Christopher Wright, Roderick, the Overseer, Wardle, and Mrs. Swainley. Jenny Lee, Lady Babbage and Erga, and Rachel Atkins, Miss Filcrum, Lura, and Amanda Boreaster-Lee. The director was Marion Nancarrow.